live from the Old National Bank State Street Studio. This is WMVP WSHE HD2 Chicago. A Good Karma Brands radio station.
Drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
Good morning and welcome on into the CDGA Golf Show presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Tyler Rocky along with Mike Gilligan on the road today. He's out at Fox Bend Golf Course. Good morning, Mike. How's the wet conditions out there at Fox Bend right now?
Good morning, Tyler. Good morning, everybody here in Chicago. Drying out from the rain, the severe storms that literally we had a tornado within a half a mile of my house last night. I think it hit Cantini.
Wow.
But out here at Fox Bend, it looks like we're in Denver, Colorado. The skies are sunny. Clouds are gone. Rain left about an hour ago. We have ideal scoring conditions today, soft greens, and just one of the finest manicured public golf courses you're going to find in our district, no doubt.
That's fantastic. And you and Eric Ciotti will be participating in an event out there. We're going to talk with a number of people today. Jerry Mattman, past president of the CDGA, and also someone who's been around everything that's going on with the Senate hearings between LIV Golf and the PGA Tour. We'll also talk with Teddy Greenstein from PointsBet today, coming up at 9 o'clock as the British Open, believe it or not, kind of snuck up on us here, but 4 days away from getting going underway. And then Lou Ramadani from Fox Bend is going to join us as well to talk a little bit more about the event that you will be participating in, Mike. But if you want to join us, 312-332-3776. As this segment brought to you by Geneva National, experience 54 holes of legendary golf at Destination Geneva National. So lots to get to as the Scottish Open going on right now, kind of the prelude to the Open Championship. And Rory McIlroy is someone that has certainly been in the news this past week, and it really stems from what's been taking place out at the Scottish. He does have a two-stroke lead as we speak right now in the event, but he made some very interesting comments in regards to LIV Golf. This was Rory McIlroy earlier in the week talking about LIV.
How did you feel about them possibly making you a team captain?
I know. If LIV Golf was the last place to play golf on earth, I would retire. That's how I feel about it. So
seriously?
Yeah.
So that was Rory McIlroy earlier this week saying he would rather retire than join LIV Golf. You know, I felt like with Rory, Mike, that we had sort of hit a little bit of a buffer here. And he wasn't going to go in as hard against LIV Golf, and things would have been a little bit more tamer, especially now that the two are merging, and there's a lot to get to with the findings from the Senate hearings out in Washington earlier this week. But to hear Rory come out and say he would rather retire as opposed to join LIV Golf, even though I knew you won't find a more anti-LIV Golf person than Rory, I thought the dust had sort of settled between the two.
Likewise, and I'm not so sure if it's in Rory's best interest to be this vocal and put himself back in the spotlight as he had before. I kind of thought he sort of learned his lesson, if you will, but he does have strong opinions. He's very passionate about the topic, and we clearly now know where he stands, even though it seems like the two sides are starting to come back together here. But Rory still has a bitter, bitter taste in his mouth. And I think he takes a little bit of this more personally than most because of his role within the PGA Tour and being front and center in the face of this thing from the PGA Tour's perspective. But I think he's just going to have to come to grips that this potentially could be coming together in a way that he doesn't necessarily have to embrace and doesn't even have to participate whatever the future holds for us. And that seems to be the $64 million question. And I'm looking forward to having Mr. Mattman on the air because of his legal expertise and finding out what he thinks we learned this week. And from my perspective, I think all we learned was there's agreement in place to get an agreement in place. That's about it. But as far as Rory, if I were in his camp, I would have suggested that he might maybe stay more quiet on the subject and stay focused on winning this thing this weekend and then doing what Phil Mickelson did in 2013, and that's turn right around and win the British Open.
Yeah, I look at what's happening right now with the agreements, and one of the things that we saw that was unveiled in as a result of the documents that were released by the U.S. Senate, this one kind of threw me for a loop when I did see this. The PIF proposed that Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy would become owners of LIV teams. And I thought to myself, that's a little odd. I didn't think we'd be seeing that. I didn't think we'd be seeing that level of crossover. And to give ownership stake in some of these teams, like, can you imagine active players on the PGA Tour owning a golf team? I mean, we don't even talk about golf teams. Now, two of the biggest faces in the sport are going to become owners of golf teams as a part of an entity that, quite frankly, I don't think either are too fond of. I found that to be a little bit shocking. And to see that come about, I was really surprised. And I don't know where we're going to stand with this. And really, how much of a say does Rory and Tiger have as a part of this? Like, are they able to say no to something like this? Is this just part of the agreement that the PIF and the PGA are going to get to? Like, there's a lot of different factors here that are kind of puzzling to me, because I feel like even though we've had these Senate hearings, there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered. I don't think we're out of the woods with this thing yet.
I absolutely agree with you, Tyler. I think the you know, one of the nine things that we learned was, in fact, that Rory and Tiger were hot commodities and were offered an opportunity to have ownership. But really, when you stop and step back and take a look at it, what does ownership in a team in LIV really mean as far as value? It's not like you're, oh, hey, come on into the NFL and take over this $1 billion or get involved with a $1 billion team like the Dallas Cowboys. It's these teams, in my opinion, don't really have the kind of street value or inherent value just yet. Maybe it was something they could have been in on the ground floor. But I have to be honest with you, if I'm Tiger or Rory, I'm more interested in the set money up front, the $800 or $700 million. I think that's going to grab their attention a lot more than ownership in a clip art team, you know, the right. Crushers or, the Cliques. I just don't know that, how much value. I mean, it was probably thrown out there with the idea that these teams may have, huge value in the very start of this thing. But in reality, I don't know that they really hold a lot of value, at least not yet. Their value of these teams or whatever team concept they come up with ultimately could rise in value and in stature, if you will, once the PGA Tour gets involved with this. But where it sits now and how it sits with LIV all by itself, that wouldn't have really garnered much attention if I was Rory or Tiger.
Right. I was, just to see that. Because you think about it, too, and we've talked about it on this show, like before we saw the merger between PIF and the PGA Tour, like, you and I have talked heavily about, it doesn't look like this thing is making money right now on the LIV Tour. And to now all of a sudden want to have ownership in one of these teams, I don't think that's something that's that appealing to either Tiger or to Rory, who, I mean, in the case of Rory, I'm sure he just wants to focus on the golf course. And I mean, Tiger, he just wants to focus on getting back on the golf course right now. I don't think this is something that is front of mind for either of these guys, who I don't think either guy really cares about being a part of the PIF or the LIV golf circuit in any way, shape, or form, even with a PGA Tour merger.
No, and I think in this case, for Rory and for Tiger, legacy has so much more inherent value now as well as in the long term. So I think, you know, Rory's got plans to win again, and hopefully maybe this weekend and again next week. But he's going to win again. He's going to win another major. He's too good not to. So I think he's trying to protect his legacy. Tiger already has his. So I'm not, unless you can come up with some amazing value to sort of throw that all aside, I just don't see it happening. And I don't see it happening even after the PGA Tour gets involved. Unless it is a strategic thing that has to happen so that the team concept actually garners the success from the very rollout, and whatever that looks like and whatever that means. And still, again, we may not even have any team golf when this is all said and done. It's going to be up to Jay Monahan when he does a thorough analysis of this thing, you know, from soup to nuts.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be one of the big things, and that's why I'm looking forward to talking with Jerry Mattman coming up at 8:35. He's going to have all the details that we need to know for what's happening with the LIV Golf and PGA Tour merger and everything that's taking place out in Washington right now. You know, Rory McIlroy, this is a big week for him. He's got the lead right now at the Scottish Open, but the British Open is certainly going to be a different beast. And we've seen all the success that Rory has had over the past calendar year. But Mike, when we come back, I do want to ask you a question. Is this British Open a must win for Rory McIlroy? Because, you know, he's hung around top fives, some runner-up finishes at majors, a lot of top tens over the last year and a half now, but he has not climbed the mountain to ultimately lift the trophy. And I want to ask you when we come back, is this a must-win tournament for Rory McIlroy next week? We'll do that, and if you've got a thought as well, 312-332-3776, is it must-win for Rory McIlroy? We'll discuss when we come back. This segment sponsored by Geneva National Experience, 54 holes of legendary golf at Destination Geneva National. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan, the CDGA Golf Show. We'll be right back.
More golf ahead. The CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Welcome into the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Here's your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
By Tour Edge. Tyler Rocky, Mike Gilligan. We talk golf with you every single Saturday right here on ESPN 1000, 8 to 10 a.m. If you miss anything, be sure to check out the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcast. We're talking a lot of Rory McIlroy this morning as his quest to win his first major since 2014 is back on. When you look at what Rory has done over the last year and a half, it has come with very few blemishes, and it is something that 99% of golfers would take. But Rory McIlroy is not part of the 99%. He is part of the 1%, the elite of the elite. He's got four majors under his belt, but when you look at what he has done in his last seven majors, he has six top tens, and then he missed the cut at the Masters earlier this year. He's got a pair of runner-up finishes, including at the U.S. Open, as well as last year's Masters as well. But are we starting to get into the territory now of Rory's got to win it now, or he may not win one ever again? That's the question we're asking you at 312-332-3776. So, Mike, as we are winding down here in the Scottish Open, a tournament that Rory has a lead in right now, is this a do-or-die major for Rory McIlroy?
You know, if you ask Rory that, he'd probably tell you yes. I mean, it would be a complete failure this year in his eyes for his game. But 99.8% of the rest of the tour would accept the record that you just rattled off as you know, their career, for crying out loud. But Rory is the elite of the elite. So from his perspective, if he doesn't win a major this year, I don't know that he deems it a complete failure, but it certainly didn't meet his expectations by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, depending on what he does, it, you know, if he gets another top five or top 10 finish, I'd say that's still a very successful year given, you know, what has transpired and the distractions that he's had to battle through and the various, you know, the drama outside the ropes is second to none in any era that I have been alive in the game of golf outside the ropes. And so for him to navigate that, be in the midst of that, and also keep his game at a level that it is where it is to my mind, simply amazing. But we'll see. You know, it'll be interesting to hear his comments if he doesn't win. What did he think? But I think he's still having a fantastic year. It's just, you know, we'd love to see him win, and he will have a huge supporting crowd for him to do so next week.
Yeah, it should be really, really interesting out there when we do get to the Open Championships out at Royal Liverpool. But you look at kind of what he has done over the last calendar year, and out of the U.S. Open, too, this is one of the interesting things for me, all right? We talked about this when it happened, but Rory McIlroy, he finishes second at the U.S. Open about a month ago now at this point, and he was asked, is it exhausting answering about heartbreak all the time?
It is, but at the same time, you know, when I do finally win this next major, it's going to be really, really sweet. So, you know, I would go through 100 Sundays like this to get my hands on another major championship.
And that answer really struck with me. And it really, I thought it was an interesting answer from Rory to want to go through 100 more of those Sundays. And Lord knows he might, right? Like he has been in the thick of pretty much every single tournament that we have seen Rory McIlroy in, especially at the major stage. And he's in it once again. But for him, he's in the business now of winning majors. I don't think he cares as much for the top fives and the top threes and all that stuff. He is in the business of winning majors. And at this point, he hasn't won one in nearly a decade.
No, I agreed. And, you know, the other thing that stood out to me is when he said the word when, not if. Mm-hmm. So he's planning on it himself. And I think he's got a good, you know, perspective, frame of mind, you know, a mindset going into this that is a can-do, not a can't-do. He just has to go make it happen. But I think with Brooks now passing him on major wins, I think that's eating at him a little bit. I think he wants to cement his legacy in a way that I think getting that fifth major for him is going to be, just like he said, I think it's going to, it means more to him than any of the others. And that's saying a lot because generally your first one is the one you cherish the most. But in this case, he's trying to add on to his legacy. And I think he really would like to not only tie but surpass Brooks Koepka and anyone else that is, you know, has a major that's currently out on LIV.
Yeah. And the other thing I look at is, I mean, the Masters earlier this year, it felt like he is getting in his own head to a degree. And I just feel like the way that we sort of saw Rory kind of how he sort of managed the last couple of years with LIV Golf in the fold, it feels like between the ears, there's been a lot of distractions for him. And I wonder how much it is eating at him that he isn't coming away with these majors and how much of the fact that he has runner-ups and top fives and top tens, but no trophies, how much of that at this point is the mental game? Because physically, he seems like he's in peak shape. His game has certainly been fantastic. I mean, to have this level of consistency at the majors, again, we've talked about it. 99% of golfers would take this and run with it. But Rory McIlroy is not in the 99% of golfers. He's in the 1% of the 1%. And the way that the last year and a half has sort of gone for him, it does feel like it's been more mental as opposed to physical.
It really has. I think Sunday something happens when he wakes up. And if I'm in his camp, I'm going to ask Rory, what did you do, if you think back on the Sunday of your first major when you won, What are you doing different? What is the mindset that's different than how you walked on the golf course the day you won your first major? And start breaking it down in that regard, because to your point, I think he's really trying to force it. And he wants it so bad that he's not letting it come to him. He's really trying to overattack, I think, the golf course in certain ways. And his putting, let's be honest, has let him down. And in watching some of the Scottish Open today, I mean, Rory is one of the best drivers, if not the best driver of the golf ball in the world. And his driving ability is what's picking up shots on the field. But he still hasn't picked up, as when I pulled into Fox Bend this morning, he still hasn't picked up any shots on the field for putting, and he only made 20 feet worth of putts. So what's that telling you? He has a lot of tap-ins for birdie, and or for par, I'm sorry. And that is not how you're going to win a British Open. So his short game, his putting, that's what it's going to come down to. If he drives the ball as well as I know he can at Royal Liverpool, you're going to see some gargantuan tee shots. 400-plus will not be out of the ordinary based on the conditions there. With Rory driving it, it's whether or not he can get it in the hole once he gets it on the green. That's what Sunday is going to come down to for him tomorrow, and that's what it's going to be about all next week at Royal Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm just looking at between that and also the fact that we've got a defending champion that is no longer a part of the PGA Tour. It's just like all these little factors maybe playing around inside his head. 312-332-3776. Is this a must-win tournament for Rory McIlroy this upcoming week? 312-332-3776. He came up short at the U.S. Open, falling to Wyndham Clark on that final Sunday. We go out to Carroll Stream and John. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. I think that the... you just hit the nail on the head just a second ago. Really, it's going to come down to putting. And Rory is kind of entering into, you know, the Greg Norman territory back in the 80s, where he just wanted it so badly that he started getting in his own head. And Rory's putting, especially on Sundays in the majors, has not been up to Rory's standards. I mean, he's like any great putter. He considers himself a great putter, and you see on Sundays he's just missing a tremendous amount of putts, and ultimately that's all mental. So when he loosens up and just starts enjoying it, I could see him winning a major by 4 or 5 strokes.
Yeah, like when he is on, and thanks for the call, John, appreciate it. Like when he is on, there are few that you are going to find that are better. And he's right, like I'd imagine if we see Rory win another major, like I think it could be an all-time dominant performance, or we could also see just an epic playoff type performance as well from Rory. Like he is this gamer, and unfortunately for him, it's ended in more heartbreak as opposed to hardware these last couple of years. But you look at what he's done, and to bring up the point of his putting, like you go on the tour right now, and if you're into the advanced numbers and analytics here, he's 86th on the tour in strokes gained putting. And that, to me, like that may be the missing piece right now for someone like Rory McIlroy and what's ultimately holding him back from winning.
It is. I think that stat is very telling, and I think what John said is absolutely true. But I think the thing that Rory does have going for him is the fact that he won here in 2014. So he obviously likes the golf course, knows the golf course, and he just needs to, you know, play his game. But I do agree with you and John. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins this thing by 4 or 5 shots. I could see a clear dominating performance to just jumpstart and catapult the second half and the remaining half of his PGA Tour career and having nothing to do with LIV.
But will we pick him in our fantasy golf? We're going to give out those fantasy picks coming up at 9:15. Looking forward to that. Always fun to play the CDGA fantasy golf. So we will do that in about 45 minutes from now. Get you our picks for the upcoming Open Championship. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. This segment has been brought to you by Tour Edge. When we come back, looking forward to this, we're going to talk with Jerry Mattman, who former president of the CDGA and is also now a partner at the law firm Duane Morris. Get all of his thoughts on what took place out in Washington as the hearings were on for the PGA Tour and LIV Golf merger. We'll get all of that when we come back. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan, this is the CDGA Golf Show.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app. From PGA to where you should play, this is the CDGA Golf Show with Mike Gilligan and Tyler Aki, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
This segment brought to you by Zero Friction and their new Wheel Pro Golf Bag. Tyler Aki, Mike Gilligan with you here on the CDGA Golf Show. And the golf universe was not centered around Scotland this past week. It was centered around Washington, D.C. in the Senate hearings that took place between the PGA Tour and the PIF. And right now, let's head on out to the Jersey Mike's hotline. Jersey Mike's, a sub above, where we find Jerry Mattman, former president of the CDGA and now a senior partner of Duane Morris. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much. I'm a big fan of your show.
Thank you very much. So out of everything that we sort of saw take place out in Washington this week, what were some of the things that stuck out the most to you?
As a golf fan, I learned about what the future of golf may bring. As a lawyer of 41 years who has been involved in these sorts of disputes, I learned various data points that did not make their way to the public but were revealed in the Senate hearing. And it seemed to me some of the things that we learned were not aligned with some of the disclosures made back in early June when the PGA Tour announced what had occurred. So it was extremely interesting from both a golf fan perspective and as a lawyer.
Jerry, thanks so much for joining us. And, you know, first and foremost, clear up the fact that I don't think this is a merger. And then where do we go from here? And is there enough time to get all of this in place by the end of the year? Because at the end of the year, there's a chance that these two sides could just walk away.
Great question. Yeah, I think the first thing you need to realize is we got to where we are because of a settlement of the lawsuit that was ongoing in San Francisco, and that the lawsuit between the golfers on LIV and then LIV itself and the PGA Tour, which involved allegations of antitrust violations, led to both sides dropping the lawsuit and agreeing as part of the settlement to combine. I don't know what it is, a combination, a merger, but it is clear that there are various laws both in the United States and the European Union that look at competitors when they combine or they merge and determine whether or not it's appropriate to allow that merger or combination to take place. The last famous one that occurred was when two airlines in the United States wanted to combine, and the Department of Justice conducted an antitrust investigation under something known as the Clayton Act and said that this, in essence, was not good for competition. It didn't promote better service, didn't help consumers, that instead it was monopolistic behavior in violation of the Clayton Act, and therefore the merger combination would not be approved. And those airlines separated, and after a big, huge press conference about combining, had to say, you know, we've not been given the blessing by the antitrust department, so we're not going to move forward. And just like that, that process may well occur. The Senate hearing was kind of the prelude to the U.S. Department of Justice looking at the business relationship that has been proposed and whether or not it should be allowed or disallowed. And I think what we learned during the Senate hearing is there's not a definitive, defined agreement between the two entities for anyone to look at, that rather it's a bit of a moving target At most, there's an agreement to agree. It's probably not enforceable in a court of law right now as a contract. It does have a sunset provision that says it must be concluded by December 31. Parties could certainly extend that date, but we're going to have the 2024 golf season starting in January of next year. And if nothing is in place and we still have this chaos, that won't be good for golf. So there are very serious questions as to whether or not, even if the Public Investment Fund and the PGA Tour want to enter into some sort of business relationship, whether or not that will be approved. And something very interesting happened after the Senate hearing that was not part of the Senate hearing, but PGA Tour and LIV announced that they had amended their framework agreement to drop what was known as an anti-poaching term within it that said during the negotiation of this merger or combination, neither party would poach or try to peel away professional golfers on either tour. And the Department of Justice said to the parties, you know, that is that's illegal, that anti-poaching term. And so there was an announcement, very low-key announcement by the PGA and LIV parties that they were going to drop that clause from their framework agreement. So it's very clear that enforcement authorities at the Department of Justice are looking at the framework agreement. There has not been an announcement that there is a formal investigation. I think that's a fait accompli, and it's going to occur. You have a lot of pressure on the parties to get a deal done. A five-page side agreement is probably going to end up turning into a 100-page actual contract, and the devil is in the details, and it's probably being worked out as we speak. So we have a long way to go before we know what professional golf is going to look like in the coming year, and there's no certainty that the framework agreement that exists right now will actually be put into place and effectuated without many changes or twists and turns. So there's a little bit of legal chaos going on at the time.
Jerry Mattman, senior partner of Duane Morris, joining us here on the Jersey Mike's Hotline, also the former president of the CDGA. So, Jerry, how far apart are these two sides now? Because we've talked about, like you've alluded to, it's a framework agreement. Nothing is set in stone quite yet. So how far apart are these two in your eyes?
Well, we don't know because they're negotiating behind closed doors. They're not doing it in the spotlight of public opinion. We don't even know who exactly are on the negotiating teams. We know that various law firms are involved in trying to put together the deal in the interests of golf, in the interest of the parties, and from a compliance standpoint, knowing that the Department of Justice and maybe European antitrust enforcement authorities will be taking a look at the ultimate agreement. So we don't know. It's very hush-hush, and that's how corporate deals go down. They're kept private. People are bound to confidentiality agreements until there's a final deal. But it's clear that they aren't close, or there'd be an announcement. It's clear that they have a way to go, and the fact that they have a December 31 deadline date tells you that there's a lot of detailed arrangements that have to be worked through, and neither side is, you know, going to give in and just do what the other one's saying. And the fact that the Public Investment Fund purportedly is going to invest north of $1 billion, this is a very high-stakes negotiation and is very meaningful. So I would not expect anything to occur probably at the shortest within a month. I think we're looking more towards the fall.
Jerry, on Tuesday when I was watching the hearing, Senator Blumenthal suggested and even urged Jimmy Dunn and Ron Price, the COO of the PGA Tour, to pull out while they still can. Is that realistic at this point?
It's probably not realistic, and beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But unlike, you know, two trucking companies or two airlines combining, you have a politically loaded situation here because of 9/11 and because of the presence of Saudi Arabia in the deal. And so you have a lot of loaded political and social issues superimposed on top of professional golf. So it's a very unique and at the same time very challenging situation about what's going on. And so I think that no one's going to be happy and the deal is going to be criticized. And there will be certain people that will say the PGA Tour is making a deal with an entity that it should not make a deal with. And they won't be saying that for legal or financial reasons. They'll be saying that for political or moral reasons.
Jerry Mattman with us for a few more minutes here on the CDGA Golf Show, senior partner of Dwayne Morris, also the former president of the CDGA. So, Jerry, let's say the deal falls apart for some reason here, or for whatever reason. What does the future of golf look like?
Well, I think it would be very chaotic. Professional baseball is the only professional sport that has an antitrust exemption. All of their sports are subject to that law. And so whatever has done has to be done in the interest of competition and in the interest of the game. And what that exactly looks like is a very fragile, very complex situation. So my own personal prediction would be if antitrust authorities reject any ultimate deal, the parties will go back to the drawing board and will work with the government to figure out just what the tour and professional golf ought to look like. And it may well be something that's very different than what we know as golf fans today in terms of taking parts of what's going on the LIV Tour, parts of what's going on with the PGA Tour, and having a new system that has attributes of both. But that's guesswork in the future. But it's very, very clear that anyone who assumed that this was a done deal, it's far from it.
So, Jerry, then, even if and when a deal is, in fact, signed, it would still need to pass muster from the antitrust regulators, who I'm sure are eager to scrutinize the terms. So what sort of things would they be looking for, in your opinion?
I think there are two things they'd be looking for, and I agree with you that I think that there's an appetite among the enforcement regulators to take a look at the deal. It's a discretionary decision. They don't have to. It's not mandatory, but I think they'll exercise their discretion to do so. But I think they'll look at it from two vantage points. The first will be the market for professional golf in terms of sponsorships, tournaments, players, all the things around it in terms of whether or not the combination or merger promotes competition and is for the betterment of the sport and makes rather than creating a grip like a monopolist on the system, whether or not there are playing opportunities around the world and other alternatives to whatever that new entity looks like. And then the second aspect is a concept called wage suppression. Is the combination such that it acts to suppress the wages of the laborers who are in that labor market? It's somewhat unique in that wage suppression typically deals with minimum wage workers or workers that earn less than $100,000 a year. And when companies combine, is the combination such that their wages are suppressed? And so the Department of Justice has sued in the last 24 months fast food restaurant companies, high-tech companies, and saying that various no-poach agreements acted to suppress wages and therefore were violations of antitrust laws. Remember who we're dealing with here, professional tour players, some of them in the post-live world making $10, $20, $30 million a year. And so from a political standpoint, should the American taxpayer dollars be spent investigating wage suppression where the difference in wages is with this system, I make $20 million. Without this system, I make $25 million. My wages have been suppressed $5 million. And it might be an academic violation of law, but in the practical world in which we live, is the Department of Justice going to be concerned with multi-gajillionaires and whether or not they make $5 million more than $20 million? So I think that the wage suppression issue is more academic than the other one, but those are the two boxes that'll have to be checked by the Department of Justice to give its blessing to any ultimate agreement between the two parties.
Yeah, interesting point there. Appreciate the time, Jerry. Thanks so much for joining us, and look forward to maybe chatting down the road as well.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Jerry.
Play well.
Thank you.
Jerry Mattman, senior partner of Duane Morris, also the former president of the CDGA, with us on the Jersey Mike's Hotline. When we come back, Mike and I, we played golf together for the first time, and it is at one of the most beautiful courses that you will find in all of the state of Illinois. We'll tell you all about that when we come back. This segment brought to you by Zero Friction, the most innovative products company in golf.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app. Golf is on your mind and on the air right now. This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club.
Segment brought to you by Tullamore Golf Resort. Experience a Michigan masterpiece. Talking golf with you right here on ESPN 1000 every single Saturday throughout the golf season. You want to join us? 312-332-3776. Mike and I were together on Tuesday earlier this week when we were taking in the BMW Championships Media Day. Great day out at Olympia Fields. A fabulous day put together by Vince Pellegrino and the rest of the Western Golf Association. It was a lot of fun being out there. But one of the fun things that we got to do was we got to play the course, Mike, out at Olympia Fields. And even though it was a little shortened due to some weather, we had a great time out there playing together. First time we've ever played together as well. So being out there, and I mean, what a first place to play together, right? Olympia Fields for the two of us.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the next place we play, I think our real estate value will plummet. I mean, how special is it?
Why not? Why don't we just make it on out to Bandon Dunes, huh?
There you go. Okay. I'm all for that. But no, the WGA did a fantastic job. They're Vince and his team, the way they hosted us, first class. And folks, it's going to be a first class event. The structures have already in process of being built. And is it going to be spectacular? They're going to attempt to play the regular routing that the members typically play. They're not going to, you know, change or contrive the golf course in a way that as a typical guest or member you can enjoy the experience. They were able to do it, you know, the last time they were there when John Rahm won, when there was nobody there for a gallery. So it was easy. But what I noticed when we walked around is how much they are building up. There is a three-story hospitality structure that is one of the biggest I've ever seen at a golf event, and it is going to be a prime place to be. But, you know, they have gotten very, very creative with the elevation, with the bleacher elevation. So there are bleachers that you're going to look at the given hole you're on, but you can also see other holes around you because they've got you so high up in the air. It is going to be a fantastic event, and it is going to photograph on television extraordinarily well.
It's like a nosebleed seat for golf, but that actually might be a good thing for golf. Like that, I think, would actually be pretty cool to be up in the elevation because, like you mentioned, you can see the other holes, but also kind of see how the game plays from above as well.
Absolutely, and this is, I think, to your point, the type of sports event that you attend where you do want to sit up in the back row because you are going to have some of the most exquisite panoramic scenes that you just can't appreciate on a day-to-day basis because we just don't have those structures out there. So if you have tickets to the BMW, get excited because this is going to be one of the best events Olympia Fields, if not the best they've ever hosted.
Yeah, looking forward to that coming up in the middle of August there. And one of the best things, I think, from the day was they had a little flag on that 18th green where you could attempt the 66-foot putt that John Rahm made in the playoff. You came close to hitting it.
I did.
But it just made you appreciate what he did in that playoff round even more.
You know, and I tried it a few more times even after you went home. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, that is one in at least 1,000 attempts to make. You have got to negotiate exactly how far out left you go and then just let that baby die down into the bowl. But, you know, he hit it when it was time and crucial, and under all that pressure just makes it that much more amazing. But the one thing I'm surprised that you said it was the best thing that ever happened. I thought can you tell us how did you play 16? The signature par 3, Tyler.
Yes, the elevated par 3 on 16. I birdied that hole. It was playing 195, I believe. And I hit a 4-iron about pin high, and then I sunk, what do you think, it was an 18 to 20-foot putt?
I'd say 15 to 18 feet.
Yeah.
But it was center cut. Absolute center cut.
One of the better holes of golf I've played in my life.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you just flushed that 4-iron right into the heart of the green. You played it just like a tour player. You didn't try to go pin seeking, and then you just drained the putt. So, and a solid putt at that. That was by far the best hole. You looked like a tour player.
Well, thank you very much. When we come back, we will head on out to Fox Bend and talk with Lou Ramadani when we come back here. This segment by Tullamore Golf Resort, up North Michigan Golf without the drive.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.